Chapter 31. On the sixth day, at the fourth hour after dawn, exactly 558,032 seconds since she had first touched the superviolet seed crystal, Liv rose from the stones of the great promontory overlooking the ever-dark gates. She had once been Oliviana Danavis, daughter of General Corvin Danavis, child of Recton in Tyria, discipula of the Chromeria, later rebel and blood robe, naif, entangled in the schemes of powerful men. Who she was now, she wasn't sure. But she'd decided she was about to become something different, something other. Phyros lay dead and rotting still where she'd killed him. He'd given her the option of slavery or death. Do what I want or I'll make you regret it, he'd said, as had so many men in her life. She'd been attracted to him before he'd betrayed her. Now she felt nothing. The insistent wind here on the mountain blew away all his stench, and she had neither time nor strength to bury him or even drag him away. Not while she had to think. The superviolet the people thought so cold and brutally rational was to her a warm blanket, not least literally. She was here to think and not to move until she decided which way of moving would be most efficient, and which objectives would in turn attain at least a plurality of her desires. But she was still embodied. A woman could freeze to death up here in the cold wind, even on a summer night. A series of overlapping thin shells to trap a layer of air warmed by her own heat was enough for that. Irritatingly, the body had other demands, and amid her deeper concerns, she kept forgetting about eating. She'd lost a fair amount of weight, and she'd now reached the end of the provisions she and Phyros had brought. But she hadn't been wasting her time. The Colour Prince had wanted her to be a god and his slave. The slave part was simple to figure out. The necklace Phyros had tried to force her to wear was a fragment of living black Luxin, somehow controllable at a distance or imbued with will. At his command or at her removal of the necklace, the stone would cut through her neck. Presumably it would also work on gods, unless it was a very, very reckless bluff. She'd used a stick to put it in a bag as if it were a serpent. She didn't want it anywhere close to her until she understood it. The god portion was harder to comprehend. She was, quite clearly, no god. Holding the seed crystal helped her think more clearly, to notice when she was going in circles mentally, and it let her see the superviolet light around her at all times without having to constrict her eyes. But that was all. That wasn't enough. Finally, she came to understand that the god portion was impossible for her to comprehend in her present state. The seed crystal was incarnative. To harness its full powers, she needed to integrate it with her body. To do that, she had to break the halo. Her gut twisted again at the very thought. Growing up, she'd always thought breaking the halo was pretty much the same as dying. The two were always inextricable. Breaking the halo on purpose was tantamount to suicide. Despite all she'd learned of the Chromeria's lies, those were still her foundational truths, ruts in the streets of her mind. To be fair, even in the Colour Prince's camp it was known to be very, very dangerous. Even the Colour Prince had had to put down some drafters who attempted too much too soon. Not that she herself was so far from breaking the halo anyway. A few more battles, or a couple of years without them. She'd used Superviolet wantonly in her time with Zymon. It had stilled her terror, given her poise, and she had relied on it utterly. Had relied on it from her own weakness, truth be told. Her own weakness was the enemy now, and the only way to overcome that was to become a goddess. The Danavis motto was fealty to one. Her father had lived by that, at least for a while, and it had done him no good. Her uncles and grandparents before him had served some fool lord and lost everything. Fealty to one, more like fealty to none. There is only one to whom I shall have fealty. Myself. So she would become a goddess, for herself, not for them. The Chromeria said that the sin associated with Superviolet was pride. This wasn't pride, this was power, and Liv chose power now with all her heart, mind, soul, and strength. With the Superviolet seed crystal in one hand, she streamed great gulps of alien, logical light and let it suffuse her body. She became a waterfall, a cataract of the invisible and barely visible purplish light. She felt her body reach its boundary. No one had talked to her about this. Wasn't that strange? When the price for stepping too far was death, that no one in the Chromeria explained exactly how you could tell when you'd reached the edge of the precipice? No, those fear-mongers were ignorant, more worried about paying homage to their sky puppeteer than about paltry matters of life and death for hundreds of drafters every year. To hell with them. She would have said it was like giving birth, reaching a crisis and then pushing through, except she had never given birth and never would. There was a sense of building energy, building resistance, of moving with agonizing slowness suddenly, like what athletes called hitting the wall. And then, parts of her mind seemed to blow apart. She felt or heard something in her, and it felt as if her eyes were bleeding. It was like when she'd first tried rat weed and smoked far, far too much to impress some so-called friends. First was the sense of having done something really, truly wrong to her body. Then came a rush of euphoria so strong it threatened to carry her away. This felt like the way a deep draught of brandy on an empty stomach set fire to your body, except this started from her head and rushed through her limbs, her eyes hot and cold, the drafting scars on her hands freezing, every pathway through her blood alive and tingling like a first kiss. She gulped deep breaths and tamped the corners of her hot eyes. For a long time she didn't dare move, didn't dare look to see if her hands had come away from her eyes blooded or worse. She knew that when she started, everything would be different. Non serviam, she thought. I shall not serve. Nor would she have to. She felt connected now, not a part of a greater whole, but the mistress of it, a spider feeling vibrations in her web, and one such vibration was before her, a magical creature of some sort, bound to her. She couldn't yet decipher all that her new feelings were telling her. It was like stretching a new pair of arms, opening a new pair of eyes, suddenly standing three times as tall and having to learn to run again. She opened her eyes slowly, feeling the qualities of the light streaming over her. She looked first at her hand. It was unblooded. Whatever had changed her hadn't injured her. Then she saw him. Hands clasped behind his back, a tiny man who came no higher than her chin stood before her. He had golden-etched skin that sparkled in the cold sun.
"Who are you?" she asked.
"Your humble slave, mistress. How do you wish me to address you in your magnificence?"
But she ignored the question.
"I have duties for you," Liv said.
"Of course, mistress,"